Welcome to the Connected Insurance Podcast, presented by Agency Revolution. Listen to interviews with the most influential people in the insurance industry. Learn the most important strategies, tactics, trends, and challenges facing today's independent insurance agents and brokers. New episodes every Wednesday. Visit agencyrevolution.com and click media to explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers. Subscribe today and get updates delivered right to your inbox. And now, without further delay, the Connected Insurance Podcast.
Hello, everybody. Michael Janz, co-founder of Agency Revolution, where we automate your systems, engage your customers, and help you grow your agency. And I want to welcome you to a very special episode of the Connected Insurance Podcast, where it's our job to find the geniuses, innovators, movers, and shakers who are literally creating the future of this industry, and to discern and deconstruct what they do to help you grow your agency faster. Like I said, special episode, thrilled to bring you my guest. You may ask yourself at first, why do I want to listen to an interview or a conversation with a venture capitalist? And I'm going to tell you, because they're creating the future. My guest today is Matt Harris, the managing director of Bain Venture Capital. Yes, Bain, a name you are very likely familiar with in the insurance industry, very active in the insurance industry, as Matt reminds us, owns Vertifor and has been active in the insurance industry for years. And now with Matt's interest as the managing director of Bain Venture Capital, they are keeping a very close eye on what's happening. As you know, I've interviewed people from all walks of life in this industry, carrier executives, successful agents and brokers, technology executives, marketing gurus, and on, but nobody from this field. And I think you'll discover why I consider this to be a very, very important conversation. So not going to say much more about it. I'm just going to say, please listen carefully. Matt is, you will discover, very engaging, very intelligent, and a visionary on the industry. And he shares very astutely his vision for what the future of the industry looks like, what he thinks the forces are that are transforming the industry so radically. And if, in fact, you don't think it's being transformed radically, I simply would say buckle up your seatbelt because it is happening. And he also has some things to say, some that you may not want to hear, but you should hear, and some that I think is just really sound advice on how to achieve success now and in the years to come. Before I introduce Matt, number one, I want to say thank you to so many people for your kindness in sending me comments about this podcast series. And I'm going to extend an offer that I made just a little while ago. I would like my guests to have the biggest platform they can have. I think my guests, who I've been so lucky to be able to recruit to have a conversation with me, I think they deliver something that is so important to the industry. And like you do, I care really, really deeply about this industry. I want our listeners to be the smartest people around, and I want all of us to join together to do everything we can to make this industry the best possible industry that it can possibly be. And one of the ways, one of the small contributions that I can make is to try to hold an engaging and an important conversation with people once a week. I want to ask your help. I would like to expand our audience. And one way that you could help me is to provide me with a brief testimonial. So if you've gotten value out of this, I'll ask you to send me a testimonial. And in exchange, I'd like to give you a gift. And my gift is fresh, hot off the press, an insurance agency leadership briefing which I call the amazing look and feel of the modern insurance agency, the five stages of growth, profit, and value in the modern agency maturity model. And you can send your testimonial. And if you want to, send anything. Send a comment. Send a criticism. I'll send you the gift anyway. I'd like to hear from you. And I'd also would like to hear if you have other guests that you think that I should be interviewing. And if you want to introduce yourself to me, love it. I love to hear from our readers. You can send it to my email address, michael@agencyrevolution.com. That's it. You send me something and I'll send you a free gift in exchange. And if it's a testimonial, terrific, because that will help us all expand our audience and help us strengthen the industry. So now, without further ado, it really is a privilege and honor to invite you to listen to my conversation with my guest, Matt Harris, Managing Director of Bain Capital Ventures. Hello, Matt Harris. Thank you so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. It's my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Well, I'm excited about this conversation because, as I've mentioned to you before, I think I've interviewed people from every possible walk of life in the insurance industry, at least those that are creating the future, but not somebody that's holding the wallet like you are. So I'm really excited about getting your perspective on this. So before we get started, perhaps so that people can get to know you a little bit better, maybe a little thumbnail sketch on who you are and what you've done, and then maybe a little thumbnail on what you're doing right now.
Glad to do it. Yes. So I have been doing fintech investing, as they call it, investing in financial services companies and financial technology companies for 18 years. I started my career at Bain Capital, which is a larger alternative asset management firm. And then I ran my own firm doing nothing but fintech for a dozen years and then came back. And that's where I sort of discovered fintech and decided I wanted to focus on financial technology. And then I came back to Bain Capital 6 years ago, and now I run the financial technology practice and invest in high growth companies that are trying to change the landscape of how financial services are delivered.
All right. So was Bain already investing in fintech before you came on board?
They were. And so my firm was called Village Ventures, and we at Village Ventures and I collaborated with the folks at Bain Capital on a number of occasions. And so we did some co-investments. And just when I came back, the first thing that happened, really the month I arrived back, we invested in a company called SquareTrade, which is an insurtech company based out of San Francisco. That deal was going to happen anyway. I was very lucky to come back right in time for it to happen. But it's an example of, you know, one of my partners led that deal, and we sold that company to Allstate last year, and a great result. But there are a number of notable success stories in fintech, and the Bain Capital brand, is associated with success, good success in fintech. So it was a really terrific platform for me to come back to and try to build on that history of success.
All right. So you said something that caught my interest a moment ago. I think you said that you had started investing in fintech 18 years ago. Did I hear that right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. And so I'm not sure, was the term fintech used 18 years ago?
Generally not. You know, I was looking at the data, and this is kind of a shocking sort of too large to comprehend figure, but in the first quarter of this year, $5 billion was invested in fintech in one quarter. So think of that as
holy smokes. Okay.
Holy smokes. Yeah. Right. So $20 billion annualized. I went back and looked at the data. In 2001, that number was under $300 million. So fintech was a tiny, tiny part of the venture industry, and it wasn't really called fintech. You might have a payments company here, or a alternative
right.
lending company there, but it was really not an organized sector. And frankly, that was the appeal for me. I thought, hey, even a schlump like me can be a leader in a sector that doesn't exist yet, you know. So that strategy ended up working out. But certainly over the dozen years that I ran Village Ventures, it went from being, you know, less than $500 million a year to growing substantially. In the global financial crisis, you know, in 08, 09, it was a real catalyst. Entrepreneurs started to think more about the financial system and came to believe that maybe they could do it better than the existing players, given how royally screwed up things got. So things really started to take off then.
Okay. So my listeners might be wondering, why is Michael interviewing somebody from the fintech world? And I'm going to say, bear with me, because I think this is an extremely important conversation. Fintech preceded insurtech. Certainly, if you go back 18 years, the word insurtech just, you know, didn't even, you know, like wasn't even a glimmer in anybody's, the you know, in anybody's eye. Fintech has... some people then, I think, said InsurTech was a little bit of an outgrowth of fintech, but now it seems that InsurTech has landed on its own 2 feet and grown up a little bit and is its own kind of sub-industry in and of itself. Yes?
I think that's right. There were, you know, select players. So Metromile.
Yeah, right.
It's been around a long time, and they're clearly based on technology. Our company, SquareTrade, was founded over 10 years ago, and you know, they're a warranty player, so you know, point-of-sale insurance for consumer electronics. So, you know, you can name companies that were using technology to disrupt the insurance industry, but it was not an organized segment. And frankly, you know, fintech really got started in the payments segment. That was really what captured people's imagination, companies like Square, run by Jack Dorsey, that you may have heard of, and other payments companies, and then alternative lending companies like Lending Club and Prosper. So InsurTech was really a distant, also ran within fintech until recently. I would say in the last 3 or 4 years, you know, to put it in the context of that $5 billion or so of fintech investment in Q1, almost 20% of that, or almost $1 billion, was InsurTech.
Okay. All right. So come on, you can only take $4 billion for fintech, and you got to leave $1 billion for InsurTech.
Okay. So, fair enough.
All right. So fair enough. Now, you know, a case in point, when I co-founded Agency Revolution 8 years ago, we weren't thinking of it as an InsurTech company because we never heard the term before. But clearly, it now would be designated an InsurTech company. And when it was purchased, I'm sure it was viewed as an InsurTech company. So it's, that's a good segue for something that I want to get your response to, okay? So I'm going to read I'll tell you a very brief story, and I'll read a comment or a communication that I got from a very good friend of mine who is a very well-respected analyst in the insurance industry who disagrees with perhaps what you and I are talking about right now. So I'd mentioned to my friend's name shall go unmentioned, but I'd mentioned to him, we'd had a communication going back and forth on LinkedIn messaging, and I mentioned to him that now that we live here in Cape Creek, Arizona, my wife Teresa said, hey, I think I want to take a road trip to Santa Fe where he lives. So I reached out to him and I said, hey, might be coming to Santa Fe. And he said to me in response, Michael, I just have one serious request. When you come to Santa Fe and we are together, please don't mention that meaningless, mindless, ignorant term InsurTech. To which I said, sounds fair, said Michael Janz, co-author of the InsurTech book. Which is, by the way, about to be published, I think, this week by Wiley. And then his response was, and this is where I would like to get your thoughts. I remember you mentioned that there are incumbent insurance firms and startup insurance firms. There are incumbent technology firms and startup technology firms. That's it. There is no legally government regulated, recognized entities called insurtech firms, nor is there a need for any self-appointed czar to tell insurance firms, incumbent or startup, that, quote, gee whiz and wow, now you're an insurtech firm because you're using such and such technology. Insurance firms have been using technology for strategic, tactical, or control initiatives longer than either of us have been alive. Absolutely no need for snake oil advisors to deem the insurance firms insurtech firms a meaningless, ignorant, and self-serving term. All right, so now, first of all, I don't believe that we need government to tell us when words are official. I think language kind of develops out of the culture itself. But I'm curious, what is your response to that observation?
My first response is that I think you need some more supportive friends.
Okay.
Hey,
but one of the purposes of friends is to challenge you, okay? So I can take that.
Fair enough. I agree with him at some level. I too find this semantics irritating.
Yeah.
And that's what they are. You know, but you know, you asked me if there was such a thing as fintech in, you know, when I started doing it. And the answer is both yes and no. Of course, yes, in that there were financial technology firms, and as your friend indicates, technology has been core to financial services as it is to insurance.
Absolutely.
From time in memoriam.
Yes.
So this is not a new phenomenon. But there is some magic to an organizing principle, to a brand, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
And so while on one hand it is semantics and therefore not concretely meaningful, it still has power. And I think one of the powers that InsurTech has proven to have is that it's conveyed a legitimacy on entrepreneurs and on funding sources to say that this is a thing. This is a legitimate field of endeavor because it's been branded and organized and discussed and analyzed. And it's not just a kind of a random one-off that I'm seeing, but rather it represents a groundswell of activity.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it is as radical a departure from past practice as some would have you believe, you know, perhaps not, as your friend indicates. Again, these activities have been going on for a long time, but it's happening at an unprecedented rate. And that's worthy of comment.
Well,
yes.
Your comment that fintech generated $5 billion in investments in one quarter seems to say something. So, Matt, don't you think that the sheer volume of investment in interest alone makes it, you know, whether it's worthy of a new name, it is really irrelevant, but worthy of paying attention to. So in other words, you know, you might look at a pot of water and say, you know, it's really hot water. It's hot water. And, you know, the temperature's going up from 200 to 201. And you say it's hot water. And at some point you say, look, it's steam. I mean, there's so much attention that there actually is a phase change because of the amount of energy, and in this case, the amount of investment that's being put into it.
My wife has a favorite expression about how a difference in degree can become a difference in kind.
Ah, yeah, and right. If it's the right degree, exactly. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so I think this is what's happening. It's not an incremental change, a question of just change in degree. It has become a change in kind. We had a conference of our CEOs come together and get to know each other. And then we invite some executives from, you know, larger companies to come meet our CEOs to hear some demos, et cetera. And there were executives from, you know, Argo and Liberty and Assurance and three or four other major insurance companies who flew across the country for the privilege of just seeing our companies present. And 10 years ago, senior executives at Unum and these other firms were not rousing themselves to care about the cutting edge of innovation in their field, the cutting edge technology. They weren't interested in artificial intelligence and how it might apply to insurance. There was simply not as much focus on innovation, and particularly there was not as much attention paid to innovation that might be happening outside of their four walls as there is today. And I would defy anyone to say different. That is a qualitative change in behavior that I hope will not relapse back to the status quo ante.
Doesn't seem that it will. So I'd like to put the InsurTech movement into a little historical perspective by asking you, how did fintech change the world of finance? What are some of the things that we as consumers might recognize as innovations that arose from the fintech world?
Well, I think a lot of the sort of consumer-facing and therefore recognizable changes have to do with the mobile phone in the first instance. I don't know how many of your listeners, will have used Apple Pay as a payer, either to buy something within an app or to buy something in an e-commerce context or to pay for something in a store. But that underlying infrastructure to enable mobile commerce on the payer side, it has changed a lot of behavior. And even more dramatically, I bet most of the listeners have shopped in a store and paid at a mobile point of sale. Rather than an old cash register and a brick-looking card swipe, you swiped your card in what's called a dongle on an iPad.
Right.
And you've noticed that coffee shops and flea market vendors or farmers market vendors who 10 years ago you would have had to pay in cash, you can all of a sudden pay with card nearly anywhere. Those are meaningful changes. The percentages of retail transactions that are taking place where there's either a mobile device on the buyer side or on the merchant side is dramatically increased from almost zero 10 years ago. So that's a change that consumers will see. When it comes to the credit space, 60 million Americans have a profile on Credit Karma. So they've been served by a website that lets them aggregate for the first time really and see their credit information that used to be just looked at by the bank and judging them.
Right.
Now they're able to see and have tactics and strategies
some
to
control.
Improve
right.
their personal credit and then also improve their loans, see competitive offers, pre-approved because it's in the context of their own credit information. New lenders like LendingClub and Affirm and GreenSky and Prosper and OnDeck and Small Business have sprung up to offer lower rates, more convenient borrowing experiences. So tens of millions of Americans have had their lives changed by not having to go to a bank branch to apply for a loan, but rather have these elegant, less expensive digital and mobile experiences where they control their own data to an unparalleled historical degree.
Mm-hmm.
In the wealth management space, if you look across not only new players like Wealthfront and Betterment, but players like Schwab and Vanguard, the robo-advisor movement has been massively successful. Again, and what we'll come to see as a pattern, the new entrants, in this case Wealthfront and Betterment, have actually done a good job priming the pump and showing what's possible. But the incumbents are the ones who've taken the market share. So Wealthfront and Betterment collectively manage $20 billion of assets. And Schwab and Vanguard, between them, their robo-advisors manage $160 billion in assets. So there's a way in which the incumbents sometimes say, thank you very much for the idea, but we're going to be 8 times larger than you in 2 years. And in the robo-advice space, that's what's happened. But nonetheless, the important question that you ask is, have Americans' lives, global citizens' lives, been changed by fintech? And across those three dimensions of payments, lending, and wealth management, they have been changed.
Absolutely. Okay, so now let's segue into InsurTech. So my first question is, big picture, what do you think are the forces or trends that are driving this InsurTech industry right now?
Well, what you hear from entrepreneurs is that the driver is legacy systems and insufficient focus on user experience at the incumbent. Mm-hmm. So this obviously, and this is a broader kind of caveat on the whole insurtech conversation, is you can't talk about health insurance, life insurance, and auto insurance in the same breath. You know, these are just massively different businesses. So insurance is a broad landscape, obviously consumer versus commercial, and even within commercial, small business versus middle market. So it's a very, very multifaceted space, and painting with a broad brush is risky. But I would say one of the themes that brought about, you know, this notion amongst entrepreneurs that there was work to do was the general view that insurance companies, certainly carriers, but also brokers, were conservative. They were limited by fear of regulation, by actual regulation, by tech limitations, their own technology not being great, and by the sort of historical, again, lack of focus on treating customers with great respect and care and using the most modern technology tools to do so. So that created an opportunity, a perceived opportunity for entrepreneurs to reinvent homeowners, renters, auto insurance, health insurance, benefits, life insurance, annuities, small business liability insurance. You know, I could go on and on. The common themes were the incumbents aren't getting it right and we can do it better.
What do you think has changed about consumer expectation or consumer behavior that is like creating a magnet for this change?
There's a self-service mentality, a desire to be able to procure your own services on your own time, you know, and in sort of asynchronous way, when I want, regardless of what the other side is doing, at any time of day I choose, intermediated by technology, that is really a core component of the sort of millennial mindset. Not I'm 45, so younger than me, this generation that probably now is, you know, 25 to 35-year-olds, maybe 18 to 35-year-olds, who have been brought up not thinking first about calling a customer service line, or much less thinking first about jogging down to the corner storefront insurance broker or any other kind of service provider, the bank branch, what have you, but rather a sense of frustration when they can't do it themselves, ideally on their phone. And so that instinct, that theme, which we've seen in many different facets of fintech and outside of fintech, the Amazon effect, some people call it, but frankly, I don't think Amazon caused it. I think Amazon benefits from it.
Right.
They've been smart about how to harness it. And I will say most incumbent insurance companies, most, and that is an important caveat that I'll return to in a second, most have not been focused on making it really easy for customers to understand what their options are and then to act on those options without requiring human beings to be involved.
Got it. All right. So now let's take a look at the kind of how you think the insurance industry is going to be changed and what some of the benefits are, and perhaps, you know, for my audience, what some of the benefits and threats are. So a podcast guest that I had, I interviewed him earlier this week. He ended the conversation with a really profound quote from Bill Gates. I'll probably mangle it, but essentially what Mr. Gates had to say was that we tend to overestimate the amount of change that we'll experience in the next 2 years, but greatly underestimate the amount of change we'll experience in the next 10 years. So, I think one of the dangers is in our industry is that, you know, Friday kind of feels like Thursday, Thursday felt like Wednesday, and you know, the days click by, the weeks click by, a few months or a few years click by, and unfortunately then if somebody isn't responsive to change and vigilant about what's happening, they wake up and they look around and they realize it's just too late for them to catch up. So realizing that making predictions can make all of us look like fools, I'm going to ask you to do that. Okay. So we'll listen to this podcast a couple of years from now, and we'll see how accurate your predictions were. But if you look down the road, you know, let's say 3 to 5 years, what do you think are, let's talk about the consumer first, and then I'd like to zero in on the agency channel, but let's talk about the consumer. 3-5 years down the road, or whatever period you want to pick, how do you think the consumer's life might be better because of InsurTech?
I think that the time involved and the search costs and the work involved in getting the right protections that a consumer needs are going to be down, are going to be lower, meaningfully lower. They'll get to do whatever they need to do on their mobile phone when they want it. I think in general they'll pay less. I think there's some both excess margin, but more importantly, there's just excess cost in the insurance industry that gets passed through to the consumer. And so on average, if you're thinking about 3 to 5 years, I think the average consumer will be paying less. I think in particular in the auto space, the autonomous vehicle, will have a meaningful impact, first because hopefully eventually incidents and severity of accidents will start to drop.
We all have to hope for that, right? Premiums might get might get significantly reduced. If accidents do, then it's hard as a society. It's really hard to argue against that one. Now, so let's zero in on that just for a moment. That one's, I have found that is a tough one, and I've pressed some experts on this one. That's a tough one to put a timeline on. Do you have any thoughts on the timing of the, not the introduction, but the kind of the mass acceptance of autonomous vehicles?
Well, I think viewing it as binary is a mistake. What we're seeing is that the technology is being introduced more broadly every model cycle, and it's making driving smarter and easier. You know, so that moment where you lift your hands from the wheel and you start, you know, filing your nails instead of driving, that's going to be, you know, between, I have one partner that does it today, but he's, let's say, a radical early adopter with his Tesla. My sense is that I won't be doing that for 5 years, and most people won't be doing it for 8 to 10 years.
Okay.
Would be my guess, but the capability will be there, and the regulatory framework will be there in 3 to 5 years.
Okay. So how else do you think insurance might change? So, you know, I'm assuming that there will be interesting coverages that might be like micro insurance that might be easily purchased that are just frequently overlooked right now. Things like that?
You know, that is the fond wish of many an entrepreneur.
Okay.
Is that, you know, many more things in my life will be specifically insured other than, you know, in addition to or maybe in lieu of my home policy, which includes many of those things. I think it does, you know, or doesn't exclude them. But I don't know. I think that sort of goes the idea of a hyperactive consumer who's constantly taking pictures of everything they buy and insuring everything for a nickel.
Right, okay.
That's sort of different than my mental model of the average lazy person for whom an umbrella-type policy is a bit more behaviorally consistent. So I know there are companies building technology to where, you know, every Uber ride I take, I've got some supplemental Uber insurance that I just turn it on when I'm in an Uber. But I think if this thing doesn't work in the background of life, it will not get adoption. People are not looking for more jobs to do.
Okay. Okay. Let me give you a radical concept behind the background of life. Okay, I'm suspecting we may never see that here. So I interviewed a podcast guest from the international InsurTech community the other day, and he lives in Asia, so he's very familiar with what's happening over there. And he shared with me that there is a perhaps the largest, but a major insurance company, and it's new, so let's call it InsurTech, and it's huge. And it is integrated with the major largest chat application. So one of the examples he used is if somebody is chatting with their friend, hey, I just booked a great ski trip to yada yada. Well, boom, next thing you know, they'll get an app or an ad in the app that says, going skiing, get travel insurance or get ski insurance. Now, that I would think in our culture might strike people and regulators as being too intrusive. In other words, and obviously as a society, we're dealing with this a little bit, but it's like, seriously, every conversation that I'm having with my friend, there's a third party listening to every single one. So I don't know. Thoughts on that one, Matt?
Yeah, I think, I would agree with your instinct that different cultures are going to produce different phenomena. If you think about China as an example, their payments industry has evolved radically differently than ours. And in almost every single way, it's actually evolved more quickly and progressively than ours has. The percentage, they had, in effect, a leapfrog in payment technology where they almost skipped cards altogether and have gone from a largely cash-based retail economy to one based on mobile phones and QR codes almost exclusively. I think it's 50% of retail transactions are mobile payments at this point.
Wow.
And that compares physical retail to less than 5% in the United States. So I don't think we can take developments in China, at least in payments, we've seen that they are not a near-term or even medium-term guide for what we're going to see here in the United States because of the difference in regulatory climate, mm-hmm. but also, again, the sort of human behavior. We have habits formed by having been a first world country now for 80 years.
Right.
That China had the ability to leapfrog some of those habits and create new and totally different habits that I don't think it inexorably follows will come here next.
All right. I think that reasonably true, and I think that their rapid growth in certain some of these sectors is probably because they don't have the stable, reliable incumbencies that we have in our culture. So some of the progress we made the first 80 years or the last 80 years might be holding us back and from some progress in the next 10 or 20 years. Time will tell.
I agree. And I think this is the story of robo-advisory, and I think it's relevant for insurance. As mentioned, this new school model was really pioneered by some entrepreneur-led firms, quickly copied by some execution-oriented incumbents, Vanguard and Schwab, and they won, and the new player lost. If you look at insurance, companies like GEICO and Progressive, they're very well-run companies.
Uh-huh.
I mean, I'm sure they have their faults, but they are well-run. They are brands that are respected and trusted by U.S. consumers and regarded as innovators. And so the likelihood that in what is in many ways a commodity field, so you can't really differentiate on product in many categories of insurance, the odds that a new company in a commodity field going up against companies with massive distribution and massive brand names are going to win against companies that know how to execute, I think is low. And so I think that to your point about China, in a void, in the absence of high-quality solutions, far more change is likely to happen than what we have here in the United States in, personal lines insurance, where we have actually, for many consumers, a very modern experience already with some high-quality options.
All right, let's zero in on probably what my listeners are most anxious for me to ask you about. Obviously, you are, at least to some extent, Matt, you're a believer in the agency channel because I know I've already interviewed one of the companies that you've invested in our channel. So you, to some extent, you believe that the agency channel is here to stay and to deliver a service. You know, that's kind of that's a big open-ended non-question that I'll ask you to respond to. You know, a lot of people think of InsurTech as nothing but a threat to the agency channel, and some people see it as both a threat and a possible benefit. When you look at this channel, what do you think it faces in this new world?
Well, I think it differs. Here is one of those instances where it differs radically by line of business. And I think, you know, I actually think most agents can answer the question themselves by thinking about where they add value and where they don't add value.
Okay. That's a statement that I love to hear. Okay. Where do they add value? Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Requires a fair amount of honesty, but I think, you know, we can all agree in the most extreme example that in large, complex commercial, that agents, these large brokerages, are not going away. They play an incredibly valuable role in helping large companies think about their risks and characterize them properly and explain them concretely to the different markets and find not just a single unitary price, but a very complicated package of benefits for a certain cost. And at the other end of the spectrum, you know, if you're making your living somehow, you know, selling renter's insurance, then you probably should be thinking about getting another job, because that's a very simple thing where there's not a lot of value to be added and certainly not a lot of economics to compensate an indirect channel like a broker.
Yeah.
And carriers know that. And so there's this whole spectrum in the middle. And I think I may be more worried about the longevity of agents in general than you are. I think that in many cases there are digital agents that at a much lower cost and in a way that's more consistent with the millennial mindset can get the job done, and that there will be therefore fewer human beings at least in the business of being agents and brokers, even though carriers may still pay fees to agents and brokers, they will just be purely digital in nature.
Yep.
And that's probably just as much of an existential threat to the listeners here from a career perspective. And so I think, you know, making sure that what you're working on is at the higher complexity end of things and that you're leveraging digital tools where possible is a survival strategy. I think the other thing I'll say, and you mentioned one of our portfolio companies, and not to tout them in any way, but Corvus is working with brokers. They're an MGA. They're a manufacturer of product in the marine cargo space and some other commercial spaces. Their exclusive strategy is to work with brokers, and they're building technology to make brokers' lives easier. And many carriers and technology companies have taken that on as a theme. It is basically, agents and brokers spend a lot of time, you know, working with carriers, laboriously entering the same information into 8 different carrier systems to get quotes. And I think help is on the way there. So there's ways in which life is going to get easier and less burdensome, the life of an agent. But at the same time, you know, you can certainly hear the footsteps of these tech-enabled competitors who are meeting customers where they are on their mobile phones, where they want to stay.
Right.
And I think there has to be an effort to match that value proposition.
Okay. So let me be a friendly devil's advocate on one point. And I'm going to allude to one of the other branches of Bain about, let's see, it was 3.5 years ago, almost 4 years ago, Bain Research and Consulting, that came out with What I continue to feel is one of the outstanding analyses and reports in the industry. It was it's called something like loyalty in the property and casualty industry. And they interviewed 158,000 consumers, and essentially what they determined, among other things, there's a lot of rich data in this report, but among other things, they determined that people generally are compelled to make a purchasing, an insurance purchasing decision because of one of three compelling personal values, price, convenience, which was interestingly a distant third, not first or second, but a distant third. And then the other one was peace of mind. And they recognized that those customers who want peace of mind, in personal lines as well as commercial lines, those who want peace of mind are very likely best served by the agency channel, not the direct channel, and probably not the digital channel, because as a tribal species, we get some confidence, comfort, and peace of mind because we got a guy, right? I have an agent. He's down on the corner of, you know, Oak and Maine, and, you know, there's a person that I can call on. And that if we can earn the loyalty of that person, they will reward us. That demographic will reward us really, really richly. Now, I've pondered that. First of all, I absolutely believe that it's true. My own personal clients see tremendous results when they actually make the effort to do something to earn the loyalty in between the policy renewal periods. And so I've also pondered that in the context of this other major trend, which is the massive influx of 83 million millennials coming into our industry and buying homes and buying cars and starting businesses and buying a lot of insurance. And I recognize, number one, of course, yes, they're digital natives, so they're really very, very comfortable using a smartphone. Maybe not to talk to people, like, you know, like my youngest. I don't like to talk on a phone, but to do virtually everything else. However, they do have a very strong history of brand loyalty, if the brand earns their loyalty, if they are transparent and if they use their authority in a benevolent way. Millennials can be very, very loyal, and they're loyal to companies that are contributors to society, contributors to the community. And so, and I'm really trying to look at this objectively, not just as the guy who's an advocate for the agency channel and loves the agents that I work with, but also to kind of look at this cleanly. So here's what I'm seeing is that, yes, there is a demographic that wants to be served by people, and that millennials are just as prone to, looking for relationships that they can trust as much as anybody else. But the agencies just can't do it the old school way. That it's not going to be done on the phone. It's certainly not going to be done with a kitchen table. They need to use technologies to communicate and, as you said earlier, to add value above and beyond the policy. Now, I'm going to step off of my soapbox here and see if you've got any reflections on what I just said.
I think you captured it perfectly, but let's take it one step further. How well are agents currently set up to leverage technology? And I worry that they are not well set up to use technology. One, because there's not a tradition of it. And two, because technology is a scale business. You need resources. And you need specific resources to develop beautiful technology. It's not, you know, grab a few developers wherever you happen to be. Like, you need best-in-class developers to develop best-in-class
right.
technology.
Well, they're not going to develop their own. They're gonna, you know, like, yes, developers are expensive. That's why I started my team over in Vietnam because we could get them for about half price. So quick response to your question, they are awfully far behind as an industry. Many of I'm now no longer associated with the business side of Agency Revolution, but when I was, we saw a lot of millennials coming to us because they understood technology and they knew that if you wanted it, you went to the marketplace and you found some cool technology that did what you wanted it to do. And then we also had a lot of boomers approaching us worrying that they were falling farther and farther behind their own consumers, but they were often being pushed by the second generation that was in the agency saying, hey, well, we got to get into the current decade. So I would say in response to your worry, I share that as well. I think in general, we have a pretty poor track record of technology adoption, though, maybe to counter that, virtually every single agency of import has an agency management system, which is a pretty sophisticated piece of technology. So they're used to that. I would say, yeah, I share your concern, but I have a glimmer of hope.
I think your point about agency management systems is a good one. We, in full disclosure, we own Vertafore.
Right.
Obviously, we used to own ASI, so we're very familiar with agency management systems. And I do think these dynamics are not lost. I can't speak for ASI, but they are not lost on Vertafore. In other words, Vertafore knows that its customers need this. Its customers, the brokers, need consumer-facing technology in the worst way and need to be kept up to date, or there's going to be problems in that channel. And so I think one of the elements of good news, as you say, is there is incumbent tech, Vertafore and ASI, and I know at least one of those two players is working hard to add on technology to keep agents and brokers relevant because it serves them well to do so. So help may be on the way, but it still will require behavior change to use that technology and to incorporate it into workflow. And so I hope the listeners embrace that as my... one of my colleagues said, nobody likes change other than a wet baby. The insurance industry will be the exception to that rule.
Okay. Maybe here's a reasonable prediction. Then again, making predictions is a fool's game. But not unlikely that we will see some consolidation of the industry. Of course, you're probably aware there's a lot of private equity in the industry right now. So that's fueling it. And I think some of the aging... a recent podcast guest informed us that I think the average age of an agency shareholder is like 57. Okay, so this is an aging demographic that kind of owns and controls that part of the industry. So I think it's quite likely we'll see a lot of exits, a lot of mergers and acquisitions, and we will see a lot of the survivors are going to be the ones who are adopters. They're going to be ones who are embracing new technologies and current consumer behavior and meeting the consumer where they are. So that's a prediction I have about the future. I think those who refuse to change are probably going to get left behind. So now... couple other questions, and we're going to wind this up. I know you have a busy schedule, so I'm going to give you an opportunity to say something to the agent community. Agents who are listening to this and have an appetite for success, what would you say to them?
Well, it piggybacks exactly where we just left off. I think you must be, one degree or another, a curious person. Lean into that. Do not fear the technology and the change. Tap into that childlike feeling of curiosity, and I think it'll carry you through. This stuff is really fun.
Right.
I mean, everybody now in their personal life has a smartphone. I mean, it's 98%, I suspect, of all of our listeners have a smartphone. And so people are fluent with technology in their daily lives. And so the thought of being phobic about it at work just makes no sense. It will happen to also fill your business. But, you have what you need to be successful. The tools are out there. There are a million resources. Again, one of the good news stories about InsurTech being such a phenomena is that there's a wealth of material about who the innovators are and what their solutions are and how to pursue them. And I think if you approach it with curiosity rather than fear, you'll find it both fun and you'll make a lot of progress.
Matt, I used to be able to keep my finger on the pulse of InsurTech investments. I think with a very high degree of accuracy when CB Insights allowed non-subscribers to eavesdrop on their postings, and now they've made it subscriber only. And I'm, so I don't get the sort of regular quarterly update. Yeah, have a sense, are InsurTech investments continuing to rise?
They are.
Okay.
They are. Now, part of it is many of these companies are becoming carriers, and so the amount of money that they're raising goes up and up and up.
Right.
And so it's not always that there are more companies, but often we're seeing it's the same amount of companies raising more money on average.
All right. I have one last question for you. In spite of the fact that my primary audience is comprised of insurance agents and brokers, it's also comprised of those who care about insurance agents and brokers, including, very possibly insure techs and technology vendors. Can you tell us a little bit about what your vision is at Bain Capital and what kind of appetite you've got and, what gets your juices going?
So what excites me, I'll start within insurance technology. What excites me is product level innovation. So I'm not particularly interested in those insurance tech companies, which are the majority, that are just, new distribution channels, that sort of home insurance with an app. That's not what gets me excited. I'm interested in those areas where innovative products can actually meaningfully improve outcomes for consumers or businesses. That requires you to be an MGA probably if you're gonna make that kind of change. But those are the companies that I'm drawn to, Corvus being one example. And I'm also interested in enabling technology. I've found that it used to be the case that selling to insurance carriers was incredibly hard. They were very slow to buy anything. It took Guidewire 15 years to really get scale. But that's changing, just by witness by all the carriers that showed up at my demo day. They really want to meet new companies. And so I'm interested now, newly, in technology companies that sell to insurance carriers, to insurance brokers, to enable these players to compete with all the upstarts.
Got it. All right. Matt, if, and I'm not going to ask you to give your phone number away. I don't think you want to get a lot of random calls, but if people want to learn more about Bain Capital or reach out to you one way or another, how can they do that?
My email is the best way. I don't promise a rapid response, but I will get back to you. It's mharris, M-H-A-R-R-I-S, @baincapital.com.
Very good. Matt, this has been a fascinating conversation for me and I think a terrific window on the future. So I want to thank you for taking time out of your schedule to share your time and to share your wisdom.
Thanks for having me. I really enjoyed it.
Michael Janz with a very brief afterword after that conversation with Matt Harris. A couple of things. The first one is free gift time. I have a favor to ask of you. Many of you have already complied with this favor, so my apologies if you have to listen to this one last time. I'm extending this offer. I would like to build the platform for the podcast to be as large as possible. I believe that the guests that I have the privilege of interviewing and perhaps you have the privilege of listening to deserve the largest possible audience that I can give them, because I think what they have to say is important. And I do believe that as an industry, we are stronger if we listen to what our intelligent leaders have to say, what thought leaders have to say, what some of the visionaries have to say, and those who simply see things differently than we do. And that allows us to create a synthesis to the future. So that being said, if you would help me build that audience, then I will be happy to thank you with a very a small gift from me. And you can help me build the audience by sending me a brief testimonial for the podcast. And I will, in return, thank you and thank you with a gift, which is my latest insurance agency leadership briefing, The Amazing Look and Feel of the Modern Insurance Agency, The 5 Stages of Growth, Profit, and Value in the Modern Agency Maturity Model. And this is a progressive roadmap to increased, as I said in the subtitle, growth, profit, and value. So if you'd like a copy, if you could send me a testimonial, and I'll to michael@agencyrevolution.com. And I will get back to you slowly, but personally and manually. I did have an opportunity to reflect a lot on my experience in hosting this podcast and the privilege that it is to talk to such intelligent people who pay attention to the things that we pay attention to and think deeply about them, and in many cases put their skin in the game about them. And when they put their skin in the game, then I really do respect the words that they say. Their words have more weight. And in our case, a lot of these people are leaders who have done just that. As I think about some of the conversations that we've had lately, Doug Moore from Vertifor, Bob Rustbolt, the Big Eye, Tom Doran at Reagan, Matt Harris at Bain, and then actually a few others that I have had that you haven't listened to yet. They haven't been published yet. there is one thing that occurs to me, is that all of these people do believe in this channel and clearly believe that it has genuine values and strengths, and that we should draw on those values and strengths. Now, we could say, you know, very briefly, what are they? You know, they are that we are real people, is one, certainly one thing. Real people in a real community or in a real commercial niche with expertise and advocacy, and that we have the heart of real people. So in other words, when somebody connects with us, they do connect with, they know a living human being that they, one, count on and two, expect to deliver at a professional level. And so there's a real strong tribal connection. So all of that matters, and bringing our intelligence and our wisdom to the relationship, that really matters. And they are also all saying one more thing, that it is those who adapt who will be those who survive. So we want to draw on those strengths and draw on our most deeply held values, and as entrepreneurs, find ways to deliver them to the marketplace in the most useful, creative, and valuable way. I think all of them are calling clearly on agencies to embrace appropriate technologies, but not just that, to embrace the paradigm of technology, of the way people communicate, of the of meeting today's customer. That's been my reflection. Also, I think that Matt Harris had at the very end a very, very thoughtful response about what agents need to do to succeed, at least from my notes. He said to be curious and to lean into your curiosity and to be childlike. And I thought, nobody else has put it quite that way, and it's probably worth reflecting on, is to reflect on that curiosity. In any case, I'm sure I violated my 5 minutes, but I hope I didn't violate your time. I appreciate your patience, and I look forward to talking to you next week.
Thank you for listening to the Connected Insurance Podcast. If you found this episode informative, please share it with your peers and colleagues. Explore the Connected Insurance family of resources for insurance agents and brokers by visiting agencyrevolution.com and clicking media. Subscribe and get updates delivered right to your inbox. New episodes every Wednesday.